but Mr. Skip Bayless
tweets, I've been blocked.
No idea how you can call that an all-time great college basketball game when it was won by a lucky shot. Our favorite, Coach Kelly Graves, responds to Skip saying, you are and always have been an idiot. Your takes are tired. I shouldn't have left you without a strong rhyme to step to. Think of how many weeks shows you slept through. Time's up. I'm sorry I kept you thinking of this. You keep repeating your miss. The rhyme from the microphone solo with. So you sit by the radio and on the dial soon. As you hear it, pump up. Hello, the volume. And welcome to the Flock Pod. Hashtag 073. We are here in the condo with the wonderful Avatarier producers hanging out with us. They're probably going to be loud today, so I hope everybody is excited to hear them.
You're going to hear more of them today.
Yeah, I can
feel it already.
You're going to hear more of them for sure.
It is with WrestleMania coming up this week. This is very appropriate.
You know, we haven't been watching as much UFC around the house, but there's definitely been some moves getting learned. You can definitely see it. So we are, of course, the Flock Pod. We are all things Duck sports, all things duck culture, and whatever else we want to talk about. Pretty much anything. We'll go anywhere. Marvel movies, whatever. I just said Marvel because that's what I always end up talking about.
One way or another.
Right? Yeah. You can, of course, find us on all of your major podcast streaming platforms and social media platforms at The Flock Pod. You can find me at Coach Justin D on those same social media platforms. Shane! Tell them where you are.
You can find me at BartenderShane6 on the Twitter, because I'm a bartender. And you can find me at WalkaFlockaShane6 on the Instagram.
That he is a coach and a bartender. That's how this all started, actually. One of these days, we'll have to do like an interview pod, like where you interview me and I interview you. And we can like talk about like, you know, how this all came to be and like kind of a little bit more of our backstory and all that.
Yeah,
like
for sure.
Meet the Flockers kind of style situation.
That was one of my fantasy names, Meet the Flockers.
Yes, it was. Yeah. I remember that. Man, fantasy baseball's already off to an interesting start.
I just can't do it.
Anyway.
I'm just so bad.
So today we have a spring foot. We have some spring football to cover. We have some men's and women's hoops recaps and then some news also. We'll jump into our walk around the flock where we talk about some baseball, some softball, some volleyball. We're even going to mention acro tumbling today. We will then go into Justin Reed's tweets to Shane, America's new favorite segment. We also want to mention that we are partnered with WestCoastCFB.com, and that is one of the new places that you can actually find our podcast. We have a link on their website right now to make it that much easier for you to get all the flock you need in your life. And everybody knows you need a lot of flock.
It's true.
Not a little bit. Not like the Waka Flocka, like where we're just nibbling or pinching on there. You need a lot of flock. A
lot of flocka.
Let's get right into it, Shane. We've dilly-dallied long enough. Spring football is here. The birds are singing, the sun is out, and the sound of pads are crashing against each other. And it's looking like Anthony Brown right now is the predominant number one for the quarterback position.
Yeah, and I think this is something that we had kind of hoped it would go this way. The way Anthony Brown finished last season, it'll be really exciting to see what he gets to look like with a full season under his belt, and to have, like, you know, not coming in as that backup in that role where he kind of got thrown in and sparingly against USC in the Pac-12 title game. So now him coming in full season with the number ones, I'm really excited. I think that he might have one of the more surprising seasons for a college football player nationally in this season.
I agree with that. I think this is something that we were really looking forward to. You know, we were hoping that he would make the decision to come back. Talked about how Tyler Shook would more than likely transfer, as he did, and the door really opens up for him now, and he has a defined role. He knows exactly who it is. Last year, I think they tried to give it to him with that goal line kind of position just to get him involved, and I appreciate that from a coaching perspective because you want a guy to be comfortable in their role. But I think this year he really has the opportunity to break out and be the one of the catalysts for the Ducks to take that next step, to be that difference maker, you know what I mean, to really put them over the top. Because I think this defense with this new system that they're going to be implementing is going to be really, really clicking. And that's the big news that's come out in the last few days, is Kayvon Thibodeaux has yet to put his hands in the ground as an actual three-point lineman. He's been playing all edge linebacker.
Which I think that he definitely has the athleticism. Body type is the only like real concern for me. But I mean, he was already kind of like a smaller D end as it was. And my battery is running low over
here. Yeah, I gave you the cord over there. It's right there on the couch. And just go ahead and plug that baby in somewhere. Should have the little click thing. Might be on the other. There we go.
Boom shakalaka.
Beautiful. There we go. We're going to leave that all in, too. that is all going to stay in. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Tim DeRuiter brought a new scheme. And so it makes sense that they'd kind of play around with the weapons that he has on that defensive side. A lot of people have referenced this also, but I think KT probably is going to play this position. He's probably more of a linebacker at the next level.
Right.
So I think it makes sense for him to start getting used to it, especially like he mentions here in good old Rob Mosley's notes, where he's really focusing on covering passes right now, you know, getting out there in pass coverage and what that looks like.
Right. And I mean, his body is going to transform here in these next couple of years. He's going to put on some more weight. I mean, when we saw him from last year, that's going to be probably the smallest version of Kayvon Thibodeau moving forward. And yeah, I think, you know, especially with that kind of hybrid position being in between those two spots, I think that what will make him the most valuable moving forward for sure. And I did like, you know, with all this talk about him moving positions and kind of trying out some new stuff. And he posted a picture of himself with the Heisman Trophy. Did you see that?
Ooh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, he posted on Twitter.
That's a tasty social media angle. He was getting, you know, some of that dark horse buzz at the end of last season, talking about, you know, he could be a Heisman contender in the following season. So, man, he's a playmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can go out there and make enough plays, Charles Woodson was the last defensive player to win it, wasn't he?
I think the only one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like you mentioned, with Tim DeRuiter coming in and implementing this new style, it's also cool to see him really shaking some stuff up and really throwing some stuff at the wall. I think this is something that, when we get into Pac-12 play in this upcoming season, is going to be even more valuable, because where teams thought they kind of were getting Oregon figured out here in this Cristobal era, now that it's been a few years, Oregon kind of switched it up from a very spread West Coast style to more of a traditional style. And now they're like, all right, we got it a little bit. Nope. Here we go. We're going to shake up the defense now.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're probably going to see offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators, assistant coaches from this staff moving around quite a bit, just because of the instant success and a lot of the recruiting success that this team has had. So that too will be really cool moving forward, to see how Mario Cristobal is able to adapt and kind of change with the times in the next few years here.
I agree. And I want to just file this little note away. We're going to move on, but just a practice highlight from the other day, a name for everybody to keep in mind, Dante Manning, out there forcing a fumble, getting some good reps. Just put that name away. And I think, you know, a lot of people already know who he is, but just, I think he could have a real big year and really explode for this Duck defense.
Did you see who the offensive player of the day was in the last practice?
I did not. Who was it, Shane?
Mr. Webb.
Oh.
Interesting, right? Somebody that we thought was going to be gone potentially, kind of
he was a transfer portal kid for sure.
A little bit. No, he's seems like he's back in good graces at least a little bit.
He could be a hell of a weapon.
Good.
If they can channel his energy, I think he could be a hell of a weapon.
That's the most important part.
Speaking of the transfer portal, lots and lots of news. We do want to touch here on the hoop season kind of coming to a close. And then we'll actually, let's jump to that West Coast article after hoops.
Okay.
Let's do that after hoops. I want to get to this hoops talk because this is interesting to me, especially with the news that just came over the wire on the women's side. But we'll get to that in just a second. The men team finished at 22-7, 17 in the country. But now the exodus has kind of begun from this roster, with in the last few days, Chandler Lawson saying he's entering the transfer portal, Jalen Terry entering the transfer portal, and what we alluded to is if Chandler did decide to leave, Jonathan Lawson reaches out. Take note of this, Washington Huskies. This is the right way to handle this situation. They reached out and he asked to be released from his NLI, not only because of his brother, but also because a coach, Stubblefield, wow, my brain just went completely blank there. Tony Stubblefield deciding to move on to go to DePaul.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a really interesting decision if they decided to kind of follow him to DePaul, which is something that I've seen, maybe the brothers or Terry also.
And they do have some ties to Penny Hardaway and the Memphis Tigers.
Yep.
So yep, that could yep. be interesting to see where Penny is going in the direction with that program. That is where they're from. And I believe their older brother played for Memphis as well before Penny Hardaway mm-hmm, got there. But mm-hmm. with that AAU circuit there, it's kind of more of a regional thing. So I could see that being a possibility. I didn't know until yesterday that DuPaul's in Chicago.
That's just one of those geography things, you know, yeah, right? But yeah, DuPaul, Chicago's got a rich history there for basketball. So it'll be interesting to see what Coach Stubblefield will do. I can't believe I forgot his name. That was just like a total brain fart right there. My goodness, can you tell I'm stressed a little bit today? Wow.
Yeah, out of all the transfer portal decisions, the one that I've been the most surprised by was Jalen Terry.
Yeah, I read an interesting thread of tweets. I think it was the kid who writes for NBC North Northwest, Dylan. I can't ever say his last name. But he was kind of mentioning, I think, that a lot of people thought Will Richardson was going pro after this year, you know, and we were included in that. So I think he believed he was going to have a little bit more of a wide open opportunity coming back. And it doesn't look like that situation is going to be there. That does dovetail really, really interesting into just one name. I don't want to get too deep into the people that are available out there on the in the transfer portal right now, but this is another great article from NBCSports.com. There's one name in particular that I find really, really interesting, not only because he's played at Rutgers last year, and that's where Mr. Eugene Omoruri came from, but his last name, Mr. Jacob Young. The younger brother of Mighty Joe Young.
Ooh, one of my favorite players ever.
Last year averaged 14 points, 3 assists, shot it from 46.9%. I think this could be an interesting situation for the 6'2", 185 guard to transfer in and then play right next to Will Richardson.
I saw a picture that Joe Young posted of his brother recently. He's kind of stacked, too. I mean, that weight kind of surprised me. I thought it was going to be a little bit more. Maybe it was a good angle, but he looked like a fairly bulky point guard.
He looks strong. Yeah. He looks strong. And if you remember, I mean, Joe Young was even kind of like a wiry strong. Mm-hmm. You know, definitely not somebody that you wanted to mess with in that regard. But it's a great article, but that was just one name that really, really stuck out to me as a situation that could open up, you know, with him deciding to come over here to the Ducks. So definitely go check that out. Now on the women's side, right before we were about to start recording, news comes over the wire. Ms. Jazz Shelley has entered the transfer portal.
Hey, everybody. Producer Justin here. Just wanted to jump on and add a little note. We did not know at the time of recording that Taylor Chavez had also entered the transfer portal. So just take that into consideration as you listen to this next conversation.
Deep, deep guard position. You kind of understand. She had a rough season battling through some injuries and stuff, but you wish her the best.
Yeah, and last season, in the Sabrina Ionescu's last season, I mean, Jazz Shelley was used kind of more, her and TC were used kind of more as like defensive stoppers, mm-hmm. and almost kind of more of like specialists. Mm-hmm. And I think with this roster that's going to be moving forward, she might be starting to see like, okay, that role might be going to some younger players, some players who are a little more versatile defensively. Mm-hmm. So this one, I wish I could say I was surprised by, but with the way that the rotations ended up being in like the second half of the season, I kind of saw it coming a little bit. It sucks because I really like the way she plays. Her and TC, just super scrappy, first to the floor all the time, but you got to get on the floor.
Yeah, you got to get minutes. Mm-hmm. You got to get minutes. You got to get an opportunity to do so. God, my brain is just not working today. I was listening to another really good basketball podcast where they were talking about how many, and this will make sense in just a second, how many players in the NBA right now, given more than 15 shots, could score like 20 points a game? And that, I think it was it Russillo and Simmons?
Russillo and Simmons, yeah.
Yeah, so they were talking about this, and that number is exponentially higher now than it was 15 or 20 years ago. And I think you're just seeing that effect trickle down even to the college level, where you got to get an opportunity to show what you can do. Mm-hmm. If you can't get on the floor and show what you can do, I can understand the frustration. And that is so much more amplified in a sport like basketball, where you only have 5 spots. You know, in football, you've got technically 33 spots if you want to include special teams, and the way that that's going to change with that top 11 also, that you can really get out there and battle and fight for. So it's just, we wish her the best. This Duck roster is really deep. He's got more recruits coming in next year, just Kelly Graves, so we kind of understand where Ms. Jell Shelley is coming from here.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, she's from Australia originally, but I don't know if she has any different like regional ties that she could be pulled to.
Yeah, interesting. I don't know. And I don't know enough about openings right now, even though the school's on the West Coast, of where she might end up. But we'll definitely be rooting for her wherever she does end Absolutely. Up. And that dovetails perfectly into Ms. Erin Boley, who we are now going to be rooting for all of her off-court endeavors, as she has decided to hang them up. We haven't heard it from her per se, but just it's in the news. It's out there. Has she put something up on her Instagram? Actually,
I was looking around this morning.
I haven't seen anything. So maybe we need to reach out to Ms. Bowley. Maybe we need to see if we can get her on the pod. Get the breaking news right here on the Flock Pod. But she, all news pointing to her hanging it up.
Yeah, not putting her name into the WNBA draft was, I think, the biggest surprise, especially when she was projected in multiple outlets to be drafted in the first two, in those two rounds there. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. I mean, that was the thing. Like, when you told me that, I was very surprised. My initial, feeling was shocked.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like getting into that thing that I was talking about on the last podcast. So eventually you're just kind of like, how hard do I want to work to get to that next level? And if your heart isn't 100% into it, and if you know that you're not willing to have those 5 a.m. workouts and do all those things that I think that Erin Bowley would need to succeed at the next level, I think she could get there. Definitely like get a paycheck, get a jersey and all that stuff. But also some people just aren't wired that way to just kind of go through the motions, and they'd rather put 100% of their energy into something else.
And maybe this is also one of those situations like Elena Deladon, where she just needs to take a year or two away. You know, you never know what the toll the game is taking from a physical and mental perspective. So once again, wishing Ms. Erin Bowley all the best in whatever she decides to do next, and come on the pod. Come on the pod, Erin. Tell us about it. Tell us about your decision and why you decided to do that. The Women Ducks, the Lady Ducks, the Fighting Ducks, they finished 15th in the coaches poll, a 15-9 overall record. Again, we can talk about it was a successful season, to be like the way it ended. Not necessarily, but again, successful season overall.
It was really cool to see after the tournament how high that on the men's and women's sides of the Pac-12 schools finished in the coaches' poll.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, Oregon on the men's side being 17th, UCLA 7th, USC 9th, the Beavs 20th, and Colorado 23rd. And then on the women's side, like you mentioned, Oregon being 15th, Stanford and Arizona 1st and 2nd, and UCLA 12th is something that I think now, especially in the latter half of the year, the coaches' polls is where I thought the Oregon teams were disrespected the most. Because a lot of times those coaches' polls with the press polls combined is where you get those rankings. And I thought that nationally, a lot of the coaches were kind of slighting some of the Pac-12 schools, and that has completely flipped. So that's cool to see.
Bro, I don't know. I saw a way too early ranking for next year that had UCLA ranked number one.
Really?
For the men. I need to update myself on who they have coming in from a recruiting basis, but that would be...
Well, and who's leaving? Because, I mean, Tiger Campbell is the senior, but, I mean, he could come back.
Yeah, Johnny's probably going to the NBA. Yeah, I mean, after a tournament run like that, but who knows? We'll see. He's got the opportunity to go see how he plays out. So let's jump into this WestCoastCFB.com article and kind of talk about just just lay it out for us here, Shane. What are they talking about here?
So West Coast CFB, the wonderful college football site that we are partnered with, decided to do their own little Sweet 16, you know, capitalizing on the time of the year. And we feel like this is the appropriate time with the tournaments just wrapping up here over the weekend, where they ranked their top 16 Pac-12 schools in football. I should clarify that. And so I went through and kind of...
And they went just for the last 30 years. Just kind of like the modern era. You would consider, the modern, the common area, if you will. And of course, they went to 1991 because they had to get their number one team included.
Of course, yeah. And that being said, the number one seed in this is the 1991 University of Washington Huskies.
Boo.
One of, I think, only three teams that from UW that made the list here. It's fairly dominant in just a couple schools. So we got USC with one, two.
Yeah, Huskies are on there three times.
Yeah, USC is on here seven times, and all basically in that the latter half of that Pete Carroll era.
Petey Sunshine, baby. Petey Sunshine.
It was kind of like going back and reading this article, I kind of forgotten just what that was like, how dominant they were.
Bro, and like the spectacle of what the USC football sideline was like the celebrities that were showing up there during that time. And like it was... That was a crazy time of Pac-12 football.
So just we'll go through this just kind of real quick here.
Pac-10 football.
The first versus 16 matchup, we got the 1991 Huskies and the 2006 USC Trojans.
Yeah, that's the Huskies.
It's got to be the Huskies. Although that is a very talented USC team. To be a 16 seed, that's crazy. The 2 versus 14, we got the 04 USC team against the 2006 UW.
I don't even remember that. It was at the 2006 UW. Who was on that team? I
2016
don't UW. Oh, 2016.
That was UW. Their playoff team.
Oh, yeah. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Get out of here, UW.
So, yeah, we got USC going there. And then the 314, we got this is a really interesting matchup because if you played this game, you'd have a lot of players playing against themselves. 2003 versus the 2002 Trojans.
That's where you like make the rule where you're playing, you're like, hey, you can't be the same school. I don't care if it's a different year.
I had 2003 coming out with that one.
That makes sense.
A little bit more experience. Matt Leinart's Heisman year, I believe. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. 2005 USC versus 2000 Oregon State Beavers.
Man, I'm tempted, but I think it's got to be USC again.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's as much as you want to pick that Beaver team. Yeah. They're a lot of fun.
That was a plucky Beaver squad for sure, but then they also got waxed. They waxed Notre Dame. That's what it was. That's the one where they went to the Fiesta Bowl and absolutely waxed the Irish.
Yeah, because that was
41-9
when they had what's his name, right? Steven Jackson.
Yeah, well, they had Jonathan Smith, Chad Johnson, T.J. Houshmandzadeh. That was a great team.
Mm-hmm. Then we got the first.
I don't know, Oregon. Man. I might change my answer. I might take that Beaver squad, but man, that'd be a fun game to watch.
I went with the 05 USC team.
Okay. All right.
Then we got our first Oregon Duck team here. We got the 2014 Ducks versus the 2010 Stanford Cardinal.
I hated that Cardinal team.
Me too.
So much. I hated that Cardinal team.
That was Andrew Luck, Toby Gerhard.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Toby Gerhard, the legendary Minnesota Viking.
So I got the 2014 Ducks on that one. Then we got a fun matchup here in the 6-11. We got 2010 Ducks versus the 2000 Huskies.
I mean, Marcus Tuiasosopo was the truth for that Husky team. I mean, maybe the only Husky that I was ever tempted to root for from a football perspective, but it's got to be the Ducks.
Yep, I 100% agree on that one. And then we have another Duck team here in the 7th seed going against the 10th seed is the 1996 Arizona State Sun Devils versus the 2012 Oregon Ducks.
I don't know, man. 7-10s are usually ripe for an upset, but mm-hmm. I think I got to take that 7th seed in this matchup also. That team was so talented.
And then for our 8-9, it's another fun one. The 2008 USC team versus the 2001 very sneaky Oregon Duck squad.
Now, here's my upset because I've got that Joey Harrington jersey hanging in my freaking closet right now. So I got to take that Oregon Duck team that should have played for the national title.
And I'd say that's probably the Oregon Duck team that has the most skill, the most talent at the skill position.
That's Maurice Morris running over Buffaloes,
Ontario
baby.
Smith, yeah. You got Sammy Parker.
The Wizenator himself, Ontario mm-hmm. Smith.
So we're not going to go all the way down the line here and do all of the matchups, but I have in my final, I have the 2005 USC Trojans losing to the 2014 Oregon Quack Attack.
I mean, we're a Duck podcast. What do you want from us?
Like, I probably in my brain, I might go with USC winning that matchup. But, I mean, Marcus, that was the year we got to embarrass famous Jameis yeah. in that
the
first
wacky inflatable arm filling two-man game, dude.
The inaugural playoff year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff there. But, I mean, God, you could pick pretty much any of those USC teams. I had the 1991 UW team losing to the 05 USC team in the Final Four there. Also in the Final Four, I had the 2012 Ducks.
Can't argue with that Final Four, really. Again, it just comes down to judgment. This is for fun, but let me put my coach hat on again. It all comes down to matchups. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So if you want to talk about, we could do a really, really big deep dive on this and how does their O-line match against their D-line and what's their speed like with their power and what kind of coverages are they playing? What's this offense look like? And I mean, you can really get into it deep like that, but fun article. Make sure to go check it out. Definitely go begin and start a profile on West Coast CFB. Mm-hmm. Join the conversation if you will. And Shane and I are going to have a real quick conversation on our break, games. And we will be tough. Right back.
That was District 5. Now we're the Ducks.
Yeah.
And the Ducks yeah. are undefeated.
All right.
Yeah.
Quack. 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 Quack.
Quack.
Quack.
Quack.
Quack.
Hello, Justin here. Welcome back to the Flock Pod. We are back from break and lots to discuss. Shane, I was really jealous of you the other day that you got to make a venture out to the old ballpark, the old PK Park, and enjoy a little baseball. What was it like, man? What was it like to be back in the stands amongst the people?
It was really cool, especially like when they did like the intro with like the video on the board and had the players come out and you hear the dun, 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 dun. It was, I mean, the last sporting event that I went to live was with you when we went to a baseball game.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. Sat pretty close to the same seats. Having,
okay, I can dig it. That's cool.
Yeah, having like the COVID things was a new experience for me. It was the first kind of like big outing I've been to in the last like year, pretty much. But it was done pretty safely. There was no point where I felt like an unsafe experience. You're outside. Most people were wearing their masks pretty much the whole time. The people who weren't, they had ushers going around and telling them to mask back up. So that was all good. And it was, you know, smelling the cut AstroTurf out there.
Oh yeah, there it is.
Just being back out, it was really cool, and it was a fun game. The pitchers for the Ducks really struggled, especially early. The Portland batters were really aggressive, especially on first pitch. Me and my boss, who were watching the game there, we noticed that Portland was swinging on first pitch about 90-95% of the time.
Wow.
So they were really wanted to get out in front, and they did that. They got base runners on pretty frequently. And in that, Oregon did make a couple mistakes with runners in scoring position that pretty much cost them the game. Portland, I think, ended the game with 12 hits, and Oregon had 11, I think, if I'm remembering correctly.
And it was a 4-6 loss there to the Pilots,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The biggest error of the game was Robbie Ashford out in center field. There was a line drive hit to him, and it was pretty unfortunate because the sun had really gotten to that point where you could tell the outfielders were pretty uncomfortable. It took a step in. Ball kind of sailed over his head, scored two runs there, and right after that, DH for Portland crushed a dinger out to right field, over the bullpen, hit the scoreboard, which made an awesomely loud noise that kind of echoed around the stadium. But Robbie Ashford was aggressive out there at the plate. He never got on base, but he did get an RBI early in the game that kind of kept Oregon close. It got to the point where it was going into the last inning down two. They did get a runner on. It looked like Oregon maybe could, you know, tie the game up, send it into extras, and it kind of fizzled out after that. But all in all, it was a really fun game. Oregon played hard. I think that they got the best out of this Portland team. They used, I think, 4 or 5 pitchers, and the coaching for Portland was very tailored to doing things that was going to throw this Oregon team off. You know, you're only going to see them, you know, maybe once or twice in a season, and to get a big win on the road in Eugene versus a Pac-12 opponent was a huge, huge move for the Portland team. They did something really interesting that I'd never seen in baseball before. They had the coaches calling the pitches out to the pitcher and the catcher, who both wore a quarterback wristband.
I've seen the wristband thing a little bit, but usually it goes still from the catcher to the pitcher. I did want to say real quick, the Ducks did play this Portland team once earlier in the season here in Eugene, beating them 10-1.
Interesting.
And they've got one more matchup, it looks like, on the schedule for the remainder of the season next Wednesday in Portland for that game. So it looks like they're kind of playing a 3-game series just spread out over a couple weeks to give them that like Wednesday game, probably to let some of the Duck pitchers, again, I don't know if this is the case, but that sounds like to give some arms that wouldn't get into the rotation normally a chance to get out there, maybe get stretched out a little bit.
The kid who started for Oregon, I didn't recognize his name, and I think it was his first start of the season, and he got knocked around a little bit. He was number 66. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. The one big play of the game was Kenyon Jovan scored from
Yovango boom.
he got a single, a really hard hit single that could have been a double, but ended up getting a single, and then he scored from first on the next at bat.
Big man's got some legs. I like that.
I was impressed to see his wheels.
I can tell you right now, I'll be following Oregon baseball a lot closer next year. Carson Leiden made his commitment official the other day this week, so he is definitely that local kid that I'll be excited to get
North
out there
Eugene?
And watch. He went to Churchill. But I coached him even when he was younger playing hoops. Really, really special kid. I'm excited to watch him on his journey here for the Oregon Ducks. Absolutely. They actually will. So their next game looks like will be this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday against the number 21 ranked Oregon State Beavers. That'll be here in Eugene. Ducks, didn't they just play? Yeah, they just played the Beavers a couple weeks ago, going 2-1 in Corvallis. Mm-hmm. So a nice little comeback series here for the Beavers and for the Ducks, and tickets available. So make sure to go check that out.
I definitely recommend going out there if you got the time. Yeah, it's inexpensive, $10 a ticket. It was a lot of fun.
There is no concessions, though. You should know that. Shane didn't know that going to the game.
We definitely should mention that. There are no concessions. It looks like you could bring snacks. They didn't really check you when you were going into the game.
Like the movie theater kind of thing, where if you just like stuff away, you can kind of get it in.
Well, because I was looking around, I was super hungry, and I was like, maybe I'll leave around the sixth inning, but then it ended up being like, it was a pretty close game. It was really entertaining too throughout, so I was like, I'll stick around. I want to see if they can pull this one out. But I'm like looking around, I'm noticing like everybody like Cheetos, somebody has an apple, and I'm like, well, Mike, looking around, I'm like, where are everybody getting this at?
Hey, you gonna finish that apple? That kind of a situation. It is also going to be televised on Pac-12 networks if you'd like to sit on your couch and watch from there. Moving on, Oregon softball, coming off of a 3-1 matchup against the Oregon State Beavers, fell to number 4 in the rankings, just one spot down, and a big, big time series coming up against the UCLA Bruins this weekend here in Eugene. That's one of the, we were going to talk about going to that, but you're going to Portland this weekend, right?
No tickets available.
Interesting.
It's so not like sold out.
They're just not allowing fans for softball yet. Interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
Do
we talk about it? That's kind of messed up. Baseball has fans and softball is not allowed to have fans. Softball is the more successful team. I mean, that's interesting. Hopefully there are real reasons and protocol reasons, and I didn't just get all upset for no reason. I just said reason a lot.
Yeah, but I know I feel exactly the same way. I mean, this is a team that's going to be a lot more fun to watch, honestly.
Let's be honest. Let's be real. Yeah.
They have a lot more firepower on offense. It's deadly pitching. I mean, we'll get into this in just a second here. But yeah, I was going to kind of like check and see what the availability was. Weird. Maybe like send some tickets to some people just to get people to go to the game. Like, yeah. Stuff like that. It was just like, nope, tickets unavailable at this time. But it does say on the Go Ducks website that like tickets for softball and baseball will be available. So I'm hoping that there is a reason. I'm right in line with you on that one. But getting back to this previous series, on April 1st, the Ducks won 2-0 against Oregon State, with Brooke Yanez picking up the win, her 11th of the season. In that game, Haley Cruz homered to right field at the leadoff in the first inning. Then the next day, a little doubleheader action. The first game, Oregon drops 1-8 against the Beavs. Cruz scored the lone run for the Ducks on a sacrifice fly in the first inning, but Oregon was only able to get 2 hits as a team. But they did follow up that performance that afternoon with a 4-0 win, with Brooke Yanez picking up another win. That would be her 12th of the season. Tara McGowan doubled to score Oregon's third run on her only hit of the game. Then the next day in the last matchup there, Oregon wins 4-3. Brooke Yanez gets another win, 13th of the year, and Rachel Sid homered to right field in the second inning. If you heard Brooke Yanez's name a lot there, it's not a coincidence. On the season, she has pitched 83.1 innings with a 1.34 ERA. She has 130 strikeouts and only 19 walks. She has hit 5 people. I thought that was kind of high.
Hey, I mean, you got to beware up there.
Well, sometimes, you know, if you're going to walk somebody, why do it in 4 pitches?
Well,
you
can keep them on their toes, you know, keep them on their toes while they're on the box.
When Yanez is pitching this season, Oregon has scored 104 runs and only given up 21. I'll say that again, 104-21.
Sorry, I'm like deep in the Oregon Duck ticket office right now. I'm trying to figure out what the heck is going on here and why PK is being allowed fans. And I mean, it says here Jane Sanders is allowed fans. I don't know. It's very interesting. We'll have to do a little more investigative research there and really find out what's going on.
Ticketmaster, StubHub, and the GoDucks app.
I mean, if we had the technology that we don't have that I could plug in and you could hear, I would call them right now live on the podcast and ask them what the heck is going on. But we don't have that information. So, great recap there. The Beavers series, that's a big, big win for the Ducks. Just dropped the one game. The good news for this series against the UCLA Bruins is that one of the games on Saturday at 1 p.m. will be broadcast on ESPN2.
Welcome to
the big leagues. So that'll be great for that Duck team to get a little bit more exposure, and just great for softball in general to get that kind of a platform. Moving on. Oregon volleyball going to the big dance. And Shane, tell us a little bit more about what this dance actually consists of.
So in this national championship tournament, it is a 48-team tournament in which Oregon is a 10 seed. That is crucial considering the top 16 seeds get a first round bye. So with that being said, Oregon will face the winner of Notre Dame and Army on April 15th. The tournament kicks off on April 14th, and in its entirety is being played in Omaha, Nebraska. That game on the 15th, though, will be played at 9 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Streams will be available. There's a couple streams through NCAA.com and not just GoDucks.com. I don't know if there will be a Pac-12 broadcast or anything like that. Oregon finished second in the Pac-12, tying their best ever conference finish. 14 wins, also second most in program history. Some other Pac-12 seeds in this tournament: Washington is a 6 seed, Utah is a 14, Washington State is a 15, and UCLA is in the tournament but not a seeded team, so they play in a first round matchup. Pool.
Yeah, it sounds similar to what softball does with that regard, where mm-hmm. they rank some teams and then the others don't.
Stanford misses out on the tournament for the first time in tournament history.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
That, you know, we haven't talked a lot about this, but Stanford making a lot of cuts to their athletic program. That's an interesting situation down there with the Cardinal.
They, because of COVID things, they only played 10 matches on the season. So kind of tough to sneak in that way.
Well, and being, I know there were really, really tight stipulations there on the Bay Area. That's why the Stanford men's and women's basketball teams were actually practicing for a little while in Santa Cruz, I believe. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and I think they were playing some of their the matches that they did play in remote locations as well.
Makes sense, yeah, definitely.
As a team this year for the Oregon Ducks, as far as Pac-12 rankings were concerned, in a pretty, I'd say the Pac-12 was probably the strongest conference. They were fifth in hitting percentage, second in opponent hitting percentage, fourth in assists, fourth in kills, fourth in blocks, but 12th in service aces. Brooke Nunaveller is the star of the team, definitely a player to watch in this upcoming tournament, was eighth in the Pac-12 in kills, fifth in digs, 10th in overall points. Carson Bacon, great name, was third in hitting percentage and 10th in blocks. And Abby Hansen was fourth in blocks in the Pac-12.
Man, now I want Bacon.
Yeah, I know.
Seriously, man, oh man. Highly efficient team. We talked about it all season long. This team, when given an opportunity, usually does not make a mistake where it's going to beat itself.
Mm-hmm. And they've really figured it out. I mean, those three players are definitely the ones to watch. They do what they do well a lot. They really go in to their strengths and try and stay away from their weaknesses as much as possible. They don't get really aggressive with the serve. They do get aggressive when the ball is in play. Good defensive team. And then when they do get opportunities on offense, they set up Brooke Nunaveller, who was tied for 90th in the nation in kills this year. So, I mean, she had a very, very strong season. And this was a team that wasn't supposed to succeed.
Yeah.
Very, very much an overachieving team. So they have a lot of momentum coming into this. They're a team that doesn't really have a lot to lose. They can't really embarrass themselves in any way. Nobody expected them to be there. And then they have faced a lot of this top-tier talent already. So a team like Army or Notre Dame isn't going to be a huge shock to the system.
Yeah, not at all. Not at all. Great opportunity for the Ducks to make some noise there in the NCAA volleyball tournament. Wishing them all the best. Moving on. As we mentioned before, we got to give a little acro tumbling love on the podcast, Shane. I mean, I have no idea what I'm watching when I get a chance to watch acro tumbling. I know nothing about the sport at all, except for the fact that the Oregon Ducks have the number one team in the country, and they seem to be quite dominant. They have a real fun thing that they do on their Instagram with like a Tuck Chuck Tuesday where, you know, they kind of put the classes against each other and kind of see which team scores the best. So good for them. But they are 2-1 on the season right now, coming off of a tough loss against Azusa Pacific.
Everybody's favorite school.
Everybody's favorite school in Azusa, California. But the Ducks will get another chance to go against Baylor, who they previously beat this season. They will face off against them April 10th. That's a Saturday at 5 p.m. and that will be in Waco, Texas. So a little bit of a road matchup there for acro tumbling. Wanted to give them a little bit of love on the podcast. I don't think we'd mentioned them before this year, so got to give them a little bit of a shout out.
Wonder how the city of Waco is doing right now after that national championship in basketball the other day.
Boy, oh boy, I bet it was party. It was party city there for a little while.
I didn't think it was cool when they showed the students, they were showing them the game on the football field. Did you see it? So they could be socially distanced and still watch it.
But they weren't distanced. I mean, everybody was.
So that they could be.
They're at least outside, so got to give them credit for that. So yeah, definitely all the best to our Oregon Duck acro and tumbling team. All right, Shane. It's time.
Is it that time?
It's time. It's time for America's new favorite podcast segment. Justin reads tweets to Shane.
This is where I get nervous.
And this is, we're going to do a little bit differently this week. I did not read or tell Shane the tweets that we're doing this week. So this
normally
is,
he gives me hints.
Yeah, at least give him a little bit of a notice ahead of time. So we're going to go for a Kelly Graves twofer here right off the top, Shane. One of my favorite coaches in the entire country just so happens to coach here in the beautiful Eugene, Oregon. Kelly tweets, I can't help but think of last year's Oregon women's basketball team as Arizona and Stanford tip today. There's no doubt in my mind we would have won the national championship, making this season back-to-back Pac-12 natties. It will forever leave a hole in my heart. Love that team forever. And then he puts up some pictures and stuff like that to go along with it. I almost started crying when I saw this tweet for the first time because of what that team really meant to this community. We don't talk a lot about Steve Tannen, but he followed that tweet up saying, you know, that was one of his top five all-time favorite sports teams, you know, up there with like the 1977 Yankees for Steve. So anytime they enter the Yankees territory, that's a big deal.
Steve's been around the block too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was an incredible team. That was a special team, and I don't think we've acknowledged how special that squad was.
And I know Sabrina tweeted out something like right before the game about how like she I can't remember it verbatim, but it was like basically, she wasn't over it. It was like, dot, 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 no, I'm still not over
it kind of thing. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we all kind of feel similarly. Those are bold words, though, by Kelly Graves, saying without a doubt.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to get to also.
I mean, because last year there was some, I mean, South Carolina was really good.
But that was the same South Carolina team, basically, that beat that Stanford.
That should have won. I mean, they lost on like one of the most heartbreaking tip-in misses I've ever seen.
I'm just saying.
They showed it on SportsCenter this morning, and I still can't believe that tip-in didn't go in. That girl, I think Boston's her last name.
Yeah.
And just the breakdown that she had after that, I couldn't feel for her more because I was like, yeah, how did that not go in? I mean, the Final Four this year for women's basketball was so good. I enjoyed it more than the men's.
I was just about to say this hits on a point that I think a lot of Twitter's already mentioned, but I mean, this was a great men's tournament, but the women's tournament was better this year.
And I think Bill Simmons in that same pod that they did with Priscilla was talking about how like you get to know the players a little bit more, less transfers, less players leaving early, more solidified programs. And this year being not necessarily just UConn versus, you know, whoever.
It's different. Yeah, Ari McDonald doing her thing for the Wildcats. We on this podcast didn't give them much of a chance. And again, I love the Arizona coach Barnes just doubling down on, you know, the middle finger she put up. And it's like, if you don't know what it's like to coach a team and to be in the rehab facility with some of those players, to go through the morning practices, to go through the film rooms, and then to not even get shown on the Final Four video for the promo, if you can't understand the emotion in that moment, then what are you doing watching sports?
Right. And I counted Arizona out. I thought they were
both did.
I thought they were too much. It was too much into just Ari McDonald having to carry the team. And what she did, I was flabbergasted by those final two games. The amount of energy that she was able to exert for a 40-minute period was that's unbelievable. To play that kind of defense and then also have basically like the entire offensive responsibility on your shoulders. The last play, God, that girl coming down from the corner was just so open. I understand Ari wanted to take the shot, but she had three on her, and I mean, still almost made it.
She almost made that shot.
Yeah, I mean, still got back rim. And then one thing I did think was funny when you mentioned the coach when she was like, because I have no issues with her saying, you know, like, fuck anybody who doesn't believe in us and throws the bird up. What I did have a little bit of an issue with was when she was asked about it, and I thought that they pressed her about it a little bit too much.
They wanted to.
I thought it was dumb. But she was like, well, I thought I was having a personal moment with my team. It's like, you were on the court.
Well, that's the intimacy of the moment, right? And I will also say that she was late coming out to that second half because she's pumping milk. She's breastfeeding in the locker room. Like, yeah, just.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We are the inferior gender. Women, you have it. It's yours. It's yours. I mean, we are of that degree. Yeah.
Anyways. And even when they lost Erin McDonald, you know, that's a crushing moment for her as a player. And she went right up to her. She's like, no, don't be down. Yeah. Like, that's cool. You're good. Yeah. You have a lot. Like, I think Erin McDonald probably improved her draft stock quite a bit. I think she was projected as like 6th or 7th overall pick.
Oh, yeah.
But I think teams are going to see that kind of performance and be like, oh, okay, we can really invest in you as a player.
Absolutely. And speaking of that kind of a performance, Davion Mitchell went out and did his thing on the men's side for Baylor. He entered his name into the draft today. I think he's definitely going to shoot up. But in referencing that national title game on the men's side, someone that I'm not even going to read his Twitter handle. I'm just going to read his name because I don't even want to give him a platform on this podcast. But Mr. Skip Bayless
tweets. I've been blocked.
No idea how you can call that an all-time great college basketball game when it was won by a lucky shot. Our favorite, Coach Kelly Graves, responds to Skip saying, "You are and always have been an idiot. Your takes are tired." I love you, Coach Graves. I don't know if I could ever love a coach more. He's not afraid, man. He's not afraid.
That's
on
awesome.
That Twitter handle.
I didn't see that. Like I said, I have Skip Bayless blocked because he's an idiot.
Because he's Skip Bayless.
Well, and
yeah.
I hate that. Like
it's just
clickbait,
it's
shock, jock.
Yeah,
it's like clickbait. Howard Stern sports shit.
Well, yeah, Howard Stern I can respect, but the way that Skip he's contrarian just to be contrarian. He makes this us look bad that critique LeBron James because he does it in such a way where it's just preposterous. You know, I don't know. I can't stand him, and he represents all that is bad about sports media and just media in general. So that's why I love Coach Graves going out there and trying to take a swing at him, basically.
And I'm going to walk that back because I do respect Howard Stern more than Skip Bayless, too. But it is just like that doing things because you know that it's going to shock people in order to get your ratings is what I was comparing it to.
No, I hear you there. I hear you there. Speaking of doing things just to get shock value, our next tweet comes from none other than Irvin Magic Johnson.
Oh, boy.
At Magic Johnson on Twitter, he tweets, "What about for the NCAA Men's and Women's Outdoor Track and Field Championships? Will they be in Oregon at their new stadium? And this isn't in a response to anything. This isn't replying to anyone. He's just asking a random question out of nowhere. So that's a beautiful thing.
Well, I mean, that's better than a lot of Magic Johnson's tweets where it's normally just like basketball is a sport where you bounce the ball and a shot's worth 2 points. But that's a good question, honestly.
It does look like it is going to be happening, so it's a valid question. But yeah, just anytime that Irvin Magic Johnson brings up Oregon, I had to, you know, tie that in.
Yeah, and just why is he even, I mean, I guess that's, you know, there's far more random tweets out there, I guess, from just like average people. But when
Hello,
Magic Johnson,
Twitter world.
It's just like, whoa, waking up today. But I mean, every time I see a shot of that new stadium, man, every time I drive by, it is just, it's like a track cathedral.
It is it is gorgeous out there. All right, moving on here to our next tweet. This is a fun one. This one might take a second here to set up, but give me a moment. So there was an image going around the Twitterverse and social mediaverse the other day where you have to lose 3 forever and any future projects. And it's a bunch of different movie universes. We've got Star Wars, Harry Potter, 007, Marvel, Lord of the Rings, Star Trek, DC, Fast and the Furious, Indiana Jones, Jurassic Park, Back to the Future, and Avatar. The Blue Cats Avatar, not the greatest television show in the history, Avatar the Last Airbender.
Are those two things intertwined at all? No, okay.
No. We don't associate with the Blue Cat people.
All right.
However, I do love that movie. But anyway, our man Tyrell Crosby tweeted this out, and he said 007.
Yep.
Fast and Jurassic. Bye-bye. So I was curious, Shane, do you agree with Mr. Crosby, or what would your 3 go that you have to get rid of?
I think this is easy.
Okay.
Indiana Jones.
I'm with you.
None of those are good movies, especially the newer one.
I wasn't a big fan of the old ones either. So, okay, we agree on something about a movie. This is amazing.
Cool.
Okay, get out of here, Indiana Jones.
Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah, I I knew it was coming, and it still hurts.
And I just for everybody out there, my last name's Potter. The Harry Potter books got really popular when I was in middle school, so I have like this. There was a lot of Harry Potter jokes made my way. I'm also quite a hairy individual myself. So then, like later, I remember like once in the Willamette basketball locker room when Dan Hedberg first became the head coach. He goes, "Boy, Shane, you are a Harry Potter, aren't you?" Like it was like one of those. And I was like, "Boy, I'm over it."
Head coach, too. Yeah.
So Harry Potter, and then the third one, it's just another movie franchise that I've just never really enjoyed that much. 007.
So I'm close with you here. The only 007 that I really mess with is Casino Royale. I think that's a really, really good James Bond movie. And there's been a couple other there that make the line. I know now if I ever have a bet against you that I'm going to make you dress up as Harry Potter for Halloween. That's going to definitely be a bet that I'm going to try to bring up somehow, some way.
Max effort out of me to win that bet. I'm telling you that now.
On these, I would... So, Back to the Future is gone for me. I don't really like the Back to the Future movies. I just never really mess with those that much. Indiana Jones, gone. It's out of here. And then it gets tough for me. But the only Star Trek movie that I've really ever liked, or even like the show, I didn't really watch the show very much.
Me either.
I liked the newer Star Trek movie, but it wasn't my favorite. So, I got to get rid of Star Trek.
I feel like
that. And it's between Jurassic Park and Star Trek for me on that last one.
Ooh, really?
I left Jurassic Park when I was a kid because it was too scary. I would watch Free Willy instead. I'm putting this on a pod again. I don't know why I'm doing this again. But yeah, I like some of the newer ones, but Chris Pratt's never really been my favorite actor either. So it's kind of like a weird thing there. It's why I don't really, it's a whole other Marvel thing too. But yeah, Star Trek's got to be the third one to go for me.
I think Star Trek still, well, I agree with you. Like I watched a little bit of Next Generation when I was a kid. It was like one of those shows that was like growing up, we only had like the four channels. And like that was one show that my parents would let me like kind of.
Got to get up and change the channel.
Yeah,
on the
like
TV.
Eat dinner and watch, and like Friends or whatever came on afterwards. I don't know if that's true or not, but I think that kind of like that vehicle has still room with those new movies with Chris Pine. I really liked. Kind of opens the door up for the kind of special effects that
Chris
I like.
Pine? Or is it Pratt? Isn't it Pratt?
Chris Pratt's in Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Chris Pine's in Star Trek.
Yeah,
that's right.
I think it's Chris Pine, but I don't know. The 007 franchise, obviously there's been 100 million movies, and I think that's probably kind of what is a negative on my end.
Saturation.
And it's the whole kind of like womanizer, I drink martini, it's
problematic.
Like, I get how that played in the Sean Connery era. Now it's like I do like the new guy as an actor.
I like him too. I can't remember his name off the top of my head either. Sean Connery was great in Entrapment.
Oh, got it.
Random. Like
Catherine
Zeta-Jones.
Yeah. Dips beneath lasers.
Daniel Craig.
Yes.
Dips. I'm glad this is late in the podcast now that we're talking about the Entrapment laser scene. But, you know, here we are. That's what happens on the Flock Pod. We talk about whatever the heck we want to. We appreciate you if you stuck around this long. Thank you so much for listening. As always, we appreciate you. We love you. We out.
Peace.
Sorry.
You've been so good to me. You've been so good to me. You know you make me wanna shout. Lift my head up and shout. Throw my hands back and shout. Come on now. Shout. Come on now. Shout. A little bit softer 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 now. Shout. A little bit louder 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 now. Shout. Make me wanna shout. Lift my head up and shout. Throw my hands back and shout. Come on now. Shout. Come on now. Shout. Come on now. Shout. Come on now. Shout. Take it easy. Shout. Take it easy. Shout. Take it easy. Shout. Take it easy. Shout. A little bit softer now. 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 Shout 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 a little bit.